I want to welcome you to the 5th Annual Southern Foodways Symposium. I'm Charles Reagan Wilson, Director of the Center for the Study of Southern Culture. There are no speakers. This is merely a prop. I will take this out and walk around with it to make you think I'm actually using it, but Is it on?
Yes.
Testing? Is it? All right, you can hear me. I actually could yell even louder if I had needed to. Closer, like this. This is my FM radio voice. Good morning. In any event, I do want to welcome you to the Southern Foodways Symposium. The Center for the Study of Southern Culture has been working for a quarter century at our mission, which is to research, document, interpret, and teach about the American South. This year is our 25th anniversary, as our first formal center event was in November 1977 when we held the Eudora Welty Symposium. We'll mark our 25th anniversary next month with a symposium on the state of the South and Southern Studies here on campus, November 8th and 9th, and I invite you back to that if you'd like to come. I don't know if he's here this morning, but Bill Ferris, our founding director, is here for the conference. He's not on the program, but Bill, are you here? Well, Bill's not here yet, but in any event, Bill will be around, and so we want to thank Bill for all of his work at the center. We at the center have long studied literature with our Faulkner Conference and the Oxford Conference for the book. We study music, publishing Living Blues, the premier magazine on that form of African-American music indigenous to Mississippi. We sponsor documentary studies projects, and I send you to the center's webpage to see some examples of center work in that area. We do a lot of different things from our home. We're housed in the historic Barnard Observatory, and I hope that you'll come by today if you have any time to see our building and our current photography exhibit in our Lynn and Stuart Gamble Gallery. We're located right on the Grove, and at lunch, if you're walking around, by all means, come and visit the building. We're proud of our involvement with the Southern Foodways Alliance. The study of food has proven to be as revealing about Southern culture as the study of music, literature, and other areas, and it's a lot more tasty. Eating so much barbecue last night made me understand the study of Southern food does have substance, indeed. We'll be exploring many aspects of barbecue's significance, but I remind us of its Southern context and importance to understanding the Southern identity. Scholars increasingly see the group identities of cultural groups as constructed, not givens. They're created and recreated as members of groups find meaning in not just their individual experience, but their collective experiences as members of groups. The South has surely been an idea. W.J. Cash called it the mind of the South back in the 1940s in a classic book. But the South has also been experiential. Recently, I went to the Cotton Exchange Building on Front Street in Memphis. It's no longer functioning, but it's preserved for a coming museum. For generations, cotton had been traded there, and men had smoked there, so that when I walked in, I smelled the powerful aroma of cigars, one of the smells that must have defined experience for the people in that building, in that occupation. I had a similar sense in June when I was part of the Southern Foodways Alliance field trip to Austin, and a tip of the hat to Tony Tipton Martin and others involved in that wonderful event. When I walked into the old building that houses Louis Mueller's barbecue restaurant, it was like the walls breathed the smoke of generations of barbecue. Eudora Welty, in her essay On a Sense of Place, refers to the importance of sensation, and that helps us to understand barbecue's role in the sensory South, which is defined by the sights and smells and sounds of places. The South has been diverse, many different places, and it makes a difference whether you're in the Piedmont or the Delta or the Piney Woods of East Texas. But barbecue, the urge to barbecue, holds us together. While I'll leave to others to tell us more about barbecue history, it surely began from economic necessity in the rural South. King hog provided substance and later a source of cash for sale. Hogs entered Southern folklore, and some have seen the hog and the Southerner sharing a similar temperament. There's a wonderful article about the hog in Southern Cultures magazine by Jonathan Bass. And he quotes William Byrd in the colonial South, who noted that Southerners lived, quote, so much upon swine's flesh that it not only inclined them to the yaws, but consequently to the loss of their noses, he claimed, and made them quote, likewise extremely hoggish in their temper. And many of them seemed to grunt rather than speak in their ordinary conversation. This suggests that Southerners and hogs have similar temperaments, slow, leisurely, independent, and hard-headed. A professional pork smoker, Cy Erskine, owner of Let's Eat Smoked Meat in Hueytown, Alabama, puts it a different way. Hey, man, it's the best way to be. Southerners and the hog have persisted with their relationship. One of my favorite examples of this is from the civil rights era. Civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer used the swine in the war on poverty and the quest for racial equality in the South. Hamer raised a congregation of what she called Freedom Hogs at the Freedom Farms Cooperative in Sunflower County, Mississippi, and opened a pig bank for needy farm families. The needy family received one female pig. Once the pig had a litter, the impoverished family gave two pigs back to the bank. Her idea had been to feed poor people and, quote, make life better for ourselves and for the whites, too. The pig, she said, helped us toward real freedom, whether they knew it or not. What all this suggests to me is the earthiness of the barbecue Southern identity. And my favorite quote from Southern literature is by Zora Neale Hurston. It's not exactly about barbecue, but I want to read it to you because it suggests something. Quote, an average Southern child, white or black, Hurston wrote, is raised on simile and invective. They know how to call names. It is an everyday affair to hear somebody called a mullet-headed, mule-eared, wall-eyed, hog-nosed, gator-faced, shad-mouthed, screw-neck, goat-bellied, puzzle-gutted, camel-backed, butt-sprung, battle-ham, knock-kneed, razor-legged, box-ankled, shovel-footed, unmated so-and-so. Southerners, she continued, can furnish a picture gallery of your ancestors and a notion of what your children will be like, all of it full of images and flavor. And she added the important point that back in those days, rural folk took their comparisons right out of the barnyard and the woods. Well, there we have it. Yes, barbecue came to us from, among other places, the barnyard and the woods. And when we eat barbecue at a joint, a cafe, an upscale urban barbecue establishment, we tap into that earlier, those earlier experiences of people who barbecued as well. Well, I welcome you, and as we think about barbecue this weekend and enjoy our food and fellowship, I hope you have a good time on campus, and if we can help you with anything, please let me know. John T.?